It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 167 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. And today we have a pretty fun topic for you. We're going to be talking all about gambits.
Yeah, X-Wing is a multi-layered game, and there's a lot of things you need to consider while you're playing it. And gambits are one of the strategies you can employ that usually take a certain amount of risk and the potential for some pretty devastating failure, but you can also gain some really big advantages from well-timed gambits.
By this, we of course mean debris gambit.
Yeah, so we're going to break down what a gambit is in X-Wing, what some of the common gambits are and how to execute them properly, and also look at the risks that they entail and whether or not you want to make those decisions based on that risk.
And how to move into range one of an obstacle and take an evade action, of course.
All right, well, let's get into it. So Carson came up with this idea to talk about gambits, and at first I was really excited because I did think we were going to talk about, for a full 40 minutes, the Debris Gambit talent card. So only after I had prepared like 2 hours worth of notes, getting really specific and diving into all the nuances of Debris Gambit, you actually explained what a real gambit is. So maybe you could share that with our audience a little bit quicker than you shared it with me.
Yeah, so gambit is sort of, I think, the best term to describe some pretty common play patterns that really decide a lot of the games of X-Wings I play. I mean, I think once we, you know, break the particular gambits down into detail, everyone will be pretty well aware of them already. Just not everyone really thinks of them in these terms.
Yeah, I think honestly, at least a couple of them you'll probably recognize just because you've seen them in play before, and now you can actually attach some names to them and kind of the language to understand them. And like a lot of the things we talk about on this podcast, gambit isn't something that's exclusive to X-Wing. Taking a gambit is a style of play or a play pattern that shows up in a lot of different games. I know it's a big part of chess where, you know, an early move in a game might require you taking some risks and losing some pieces, but the overall advantage you'll gain from that risk and that loss is going to set you up to do better in the game later on.
Right. So, you know, simply a gambit is a move that has some amount of risk, but that you trade that risk for a significant advantage. So in chess, you know, these are early moves that, you know, you trade one piece, usually to trade up either for better pieces or a very strong positional advantage. In X-Wing, risk is a little different, you know, because we have variables in the game. It's not always, I'm going to lose a piece. It's a lot more, I have the potential to lose one of my ships here when we talk about risk. But we're going to trade that potential risk here for the potential to gain a significant advantage, be that positional or the opportunity to push through a lot of damage.
And gambits in X-Wing are really important. You'll actually find that they probably show up in most of the games of X-Wing you play, if not all of them, at least in some small way. We're only going to cover a few of the main ones there, but there is a long list of gambits you could come up with, both small and large.
I actually think it's a little bit more extreme than that, Tim. I think, you know, just with the three we're going to talk about today, I can't think of a game of X-Wing I've played where one of those at least hasn't occurred.
Well, and it's an interesting topic too, because I think a lot of the conversation around, you know, advice for X-Wing focuses a lot on list building, which is an important part of X-Wing. But I think the amount of which we talk about list building and composition and what ships to bring, it gets a little too much emphasis when actual flying, skilled flying is, I think, more important than list building overall. It's just a little bit harder to parse out and talk about.
Right. And I think, you know, we as podcasters are certainly guilty of that. It's a lot easier to talk about lists. That works a lot better for this format. And, you know, and just as players, you know, we really focus on, oh, wow, that was the right list. Or, you know, if I didn't do well, I need to change my list and find something better. But a lot of the times, you know, if you're losing consistently, it's not necessarily because you brought the wrong list. It's because, you know, you're kind of ending up on the wrong side of a lot of these gambits.
And knowing when to take a good gambit goes back to some of the core skills of X-Wing. I think one of the core skills of X-Wing, and one of the reasons I really like X-Wing, is knowing how to read an opponent. And this involves not just understanding what lists can do, what maneuver options they have, but you also want to understand what are the likely options that an opponent's going to take. And this can get kind of complicated because there's a difference between knowing what an opponent can do with their list, what all the maneuver options are, and knowing what the likely options are.
Right. I mean, a good game of X-Wing is decided in the planning phases. And that's where you're going through all the options of what your ship can do, all of your potentials, and identifying, well, what is my opponent likely to do? And that second part is pretty difficult. You know, it's not that difficult to understand your dial and all of your repositioning actions to know where your ships could be. But getting a good grasp of, you know, what your opponent's thinking, that's the difficult part.
And again, we could dedicate a whole episode to talking about being able to, you know, read your opponent and anticipate what they're going to do. But the bullet points you want to think about is anytime you're in an opportunity where your opponent's taking a turn, you want to think about what those likely options are. And this takes kind of stepping into your opponent's shoes for a minute and looking at the board state from their perspective, because you'll find there's a big difference when you're making moves based entirely on what you're anticipating, what your priorities are, and what you're afraid of, versus if you take that into account along with what your opponent's thinking. Because sometimes if you just even take a moment and think, okay, if I was flying my opponent's ships right now, what would be my priority? What would I be afraid of? You'll suddenly find out that a lot of the moves you're afraid of them making are things that they're not going to make, probably. So you really want to put a goal in and look at the questions. What is my opponent's priority? What is their win condition? What are the things they're actually afraid of? With the goal being to figure out what the likely moves are and to plan your moves accordingly. And if you can get a pretty good sense of what the likely moves are, that's going to enable you to set up these gambits more effectively.
So all these gambits come down to properly anticipating where your opponent's going to land and putting your ships in a position to capitalize on that.
And the nice thing about gambit strategies is that they're not dependent on you running a certain type of list. A lot of these will, if not all of them, will apply to pretty much any list you could bring. The key for you would be to figure out how to take the list you have and apply these play strategies and use them. Because it's a pretty basic layout for a gambit. You have the goal you're trying to achieve in a situation, you have the main way you're going to execute it, and you just have to calculate the risks.
Right, so within any game of X-Wing, there's the potential for any of these gambits to occur. And, you know, whether or not you have the ships to execute them or your opponent does, you need to be aware of them because all these are a double-edged sword where if it goes right for the person executing it, it's great. If it goes wrong for the person trying to execute it, it usually turns against them pretty severely.
So today we've actually broken down three of what we see are the more common gambits. A lot of these are kind of big picture, too. Because there are like a lot of smaller ones you could do turn to turn, but we try to pick three that kind of more affect your overall strategy in a game. We're looking at the three being bait and run, setting up a kill box, and feinting. F-E-I-N-T, feint.
Right, that's not when you blank out and feel a little lightheaded.
Yeah, if you're playing a game and you see someone actually faint, you should probably call a judge over and, you know, get them some help.
All right, so let's start off with the bait and run. This is usually one that you'll see in the early stages of the game. And its goal is quite simple. You want to create an opportunity for your other ships to approach your opponent safely.
Yeah, and the main way you do this is by using one of your ships as bait to convince your opponent that you're maybe moving in really aggressively or that you've made a small mistake and you've put them out of position so that they could easily get focused down. And you want to use that anticipation your opponent has to throw them out there and then run away with them, either blast past your opponent or turn in more abruptly so that your opponent, you know, can't get into range to focus on them. So this gives your other ships time to then move in and start laying down fire.
Yeah, and since your opponent has now heavily committed in the direction of your fleeing ship, that leaves all of your other ships free to flank them without really running risk of being in your opponent's firing arcs, which, you know, gives you some free shots without any shots back if this goes really well. And that's really a great way to start a game, you know, get some free shots without any shots back at you. You can't really start a game better than that.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can get unanswered shots, even if they only do a little bit of damage or maybe screw up your opponent's positioning, that's an advantage you've gained for the rest of the game. I found that, you know, early damage that comes unanswered, even if it's just 1 or 2 points of damage, that can really be impactful later, because that means maybe it'll take you one fewer shot to end up removing a ship from the board.
Right. Now, this definitely works best with a ship that is faster than your opponent's ships. Ideally has some repositioning actions to move even farther. Multiple repositioning actions are highly valued here, or the slam action to just really get out of trouble. Don't ever try to catch a ship with the slam action. It's not worth it.
You're not gonna be able to catch him. Most often you're going to use those more nimble ships to as the bait for the bait and run. You can use less maneuverable ships or ships with more hit points. The key there is you just want to be very aware that, you know, if you do get shot, you're not just going to lose that piece right away. So I've seen opportunities where even if a ship's not that nimble, maybe a little bit slower, you can still set it up at the start of the game kind of away from your other ships to make it look like you're going to be aggressive, and then almost immediately turn in and just run along your board edge. So it might take your opponent, even if they set up straight across from that ship, it might take them a couple turns before they get in range to shoot.
Right, and so when this goes well, it really puts your opponent in a difficult position because, you know, now your other ships are closing in on them and they have a tough decision to make. You know, they can switch directions and move towards your approaching ships. But that means that the bait ship then gets to turn in and be the flanker as well. And so this is really a great position to put your opponent in, because not only did you maybe get some early shots that were unanswered or, you know, hardly answered back, but now in your following turns as well, your opponent already has to make really tough decisions and you get to play it pretty easy thereon.
Now, like all these strategies, this one does entail some risk. A big one being when you're flying against an even decently good opponent, flying out of range isn't necessarily easy. You might have a really fast ship with a 5-straight. It might be able to boost and barrel roll in a turn. Even still, it's going to take some very careful maneuvering to make sure that you're going to be able to get into a position where your ship can't get focused down. Because honestly, the worst case scenario here is you throw something out as bait, you make a mistake, and they end up being able to focus on it. Suddenly, you got one ship versus who knows how many, and you're going to take some damage and maybe lose that ship you threw out as bait.
Right. I mean, when this fails, it fails pretty bad. You know, you have that one ship all alone. Your other ships aren't there in time to join the fight, and you might lose a piece before you get to fire any shots.
Even still, though, if this gambit is executed properly, it can give you some huge advantages where, like we said, you can get ships, your bait ship can move behind if your opponent decides to switch. If you blast past your opponent, then your other ships can come in flanking and lay down some unanswered fire. There's a lot of opportunities, and I know Carson and I have employed this strategy in a lot of our X-Wing games.
Right. I mean, that's part of the reason I've been enjoying flying the Resistance Aces or Danger Zone in particular, where, you know, all those ships have multiple repositioning actions. You know, Neon's got afterburners and the slam action as well. And Lulo and Poe both have access to boost and barrel roll and just a pretty fast dial. So any of my ships could be bait. And my other two ships can close in pretty quickly as well. So it's a lot of fun and works pretty well.
All right, so our next gambit is one you've probably heard this term thrown around before. Maybe you haven't been able to determine what exactly people mean when they're talking about it. But a kill box is something that will come up in a lot of X-Wing games. And this is a pretty strong gambit. If it's successful, it usually means one of your opponent's ships is going to get removed from the board.
Right, and so the goal of the kill box is to set up an extremely advantaged combat round. The execution of that, a little bit more difficult. So this strategy works best when a key target that your opponent has is facing your ships. That means that its maneuver options to get away from you are pretty limited. And so your goal is to use all of your ships to eliminate as many of their maneuver options as possible, making it really difficult for them to escape. So usually your front ship attempts to block a short maneuver. And then all of your other ships occupy all of the other space of their maneuver dial and take actions then to maximize damage. And so then when this key ace moves, usually you've blocked their maneuver and they land at the front of your ships.
Yeah, and the kill box can be approached a couple different ways. You could have all your ships coming from one side, block your opponent, and then you're all just shooting. Sometimes, if you're really in the scrum of the fight, you might have all your ships pointing into kind of a small square area, trying to get all your arcs on the same ship. This strategy is interesting because this one can be employed really quickly given the right situation. So you might already just be in the middle of the game, and you might see an opportunity where, well, this particular ship my opponent has doesn't have a lot of good options, so I know they're going to probably end up in a small amount of space. And then I evaluate with my ships, and I go, okay, I think I can get all my arcs pointing at that small amount of space, switch all my offensive options. And this one can catch your opponent by surprise because maybe it didn't look like you were going for that ship yet, or you had already laid down damage on your other ships. But if you're able to get, you know, a full round of shots with all your remaining ships on one target, there's a really good chance that you can lay down a lot of damage and maybe destroy that ship in a single turn.
Right. I mean, this strategy definitely works best in the mid game where a lot of a ship's maneuver options aren't available, you know, be it there's obstacles in the way or just other ships in the way. That really helps set up a successful kill box.
And most often than not, you need a lot of attack dice. So this is not necessarily a strategy you can employ in the late game unless you're, you know, already at the advantage and have a lot of ships remaining. You need a lot of attack dice to make this feasible to actually be effective.
Right. I mean, and the block helps a lot because, you know, as long as you have enough other ships to follow up through attacks, you know, you take away their actions as well, meaning they're not going to have defensive mods and their shot back at you is probably not going to be that devastating as well.
Now, this particular gambit incurs a lot of risk. The biggest risk being that in order to make an effective kill box, you need to set all your arcs to basically cover a pretty limited area of the game mat. And if your opponent can't anticipate this and they have the options there to escape it, this could basically mean that none of your ships are going to shoot at that target this turn.
Right. I mean, yeah, so if you concentrate all of your firing arcs in a narrow area, that means if your opponent's able to arc dodge that area, then you don't get to shoot that turn.
The other problem that the kill box creates is that sometimes, because you're having to focus all your fire on a single target, you might have to take a less optimal shot with one of your ships to focus on your target. So let's say the target you're focusing all your other ships on is at range two of you, but you might have a really good range one shot in front of you. Sometimes in order to make sure you're getting the most out of this gambit, you have to actually deny yourself that range one shot in order to shoot the range two shot at the target you're trying to focus on.
Right. I mean, the goal of a kill box is to remove a ship. That's the ideal outcome. And so you need to prioritize removing that key target. Now, the funny thing about the kill box is sometimes, you know, the counter to the kill box can have an inherent risk in itself as well. A lot of times the best way to avoid this is, you know, selecting a turn maneuver or something similar that is going to point you away from your opponent.
I found that more often than not, opponents don't anticipate you taking a maneuver that will actually take you out of the fight and move your firing arc out of the fight, which is sometimes why that could be a really effective defense where, oh, they weren't anticipating me taking that hard left too, because that means I'm not going to shoot at any of their ships. Well, that's fine if they don't get to shoot at any of my ships. So I want to keep that option in my playbook.
Right. So, and this can really backfire if they decide not to go for the kill box. You know, if they go for the full commit and you turn away and dodge the arcs and nobody shoots, that's fine. You can reset for next turn. But if they, you know, just move like one straight, keep their firing arcs wide and you turn away, well, now you're not shooting at your opponent and they still have a few shots at you. And you might still have to worry about a kill box the next turn.
Yeah, this is actually a gambit that I've employed a lot with the list I've been running recently with Obi-Wan in a 7B Ether Sprite along with R2 Astromech and then just three of the generic Initiative 2 ARC 170s. This list really lends itself to setting up some cool kill boxes because the arcs have two firing arcs, the forward arc with three dice and the rear arc with two dice. This means I have a lot of awesome maneuver options where I can still maintain a firing arc on my opponent. And sometimes this is an advantage to me because I will opt to use that rear firing arc, take a kind of a weird move, maybe a turn away, shoot out the rear. And a lot of opponents don't anticipate this because they kind of necessarily assume that I'm going to try and get my forward arc, which gets me an extra die, try to use that, well, that won't necessarily give me as many targeting options because something might be too close otherwise. A lot of times I'll be able to turn the arcs in weird ways, maybe get them out of range for my opponent to shoot, and then still have all three of those arcs lined up on my opponent.
Right. Well, and the other thing you have going for you is that those Arc 170s, you know, being a medium base, they're pretty effective blockers. Like, they can really clog up a lot of your opponent's escape options just with that larger base, you know, plus they have that barrel roll to put them in the right spot as well.
Yeah, often you'll find if you're flying arcs like me, you'll be running your three arcs kind of in a small formation. So that means you might have one arc out in front who has a lot of great options for blocks, because combining, you know, a three straight or a three bank or a two hard turn followed up by that medium base barrel roll, there's a lot of potential area you can cover up to block your opponent. And that's actually a huge part of it. A lot of times I won't mind actually throwing my forward arc, who's probably already taken some damage, out in front to block. That means that's one less shot coming at him. And that means less tokens for whatever ship I block, so my other two can follow up and lay down some damage.
Right, and so this is probably the most common gambit. You know, you see this all the time, and it's tough because it's really one that, you know, both players can play around pretty well. And I think this is, you know, one of those things that makes X-Wing just so fun. You know, if they go for the kill box and it works well, you know, I'm in a really bad position, but if I'm able to escape, then suddenly I've created a positional advantage. And it's funny because just the threat of it is a gambit in itself.
All right, so the last gambit we're going to talk about today is fainting. And this is actually one of, I think, the more psychologically interesting strategies, because it's not necessarily clear to your opponent what you're going to do. And this is probably one of the hardest ones to anticipate. The goal of fainting is to convince your opponent that you're going to focus on one of their ships and then abruptly switch to another, catching them off guard and exposing them to damage they weren't anticipating.
Right. And, you know, fainting does definitely catch opponents off guard quite a bit, because I think inherently it is a bad strategy. You know, we want to focus on one ship, you know, get it off the table and then move on to the next target. But the goal here is to prioritize dealing lots of damage over focusing your damage.
Now, in order to successfully execute a feint, you're going to need to set up a situation where it looks like to your opponent that you're really, you know, set on pursuing one of their ships. And this can actually be kind of a costly setup, because a lot of times it will necessitate that you not only approach those ships, that you actually start firing at them, maybe start taking target locks on them, just to make your opponent think that's really where your attention is. And then they might have one or two ships flanking that they're hoping to bring in, you know, soon or in the following turn, to start laying down damage at you behind, from behind.
Right. And so if you can get into your opponent's mindset a bit here, you know, when one of your ships needs to run, that means you need to make up for that with your other ships, which will cause your opponent to put their other ships into pretty aggressive positions so that they can catch back up on the damage race or eliminate your aggressive ships. And so you need to properly identify where these aggressive maneuvers are going to land their other ships. And then the key part to fainting is, of course, putting your ships in a place to capitalize on that.
Now, this strategy can be pretty risky, because if you switch targets really abruptly, you haven't focused fire necessarily. So if you split your damage across multiple ships, that long term isn't going to help you. You really need to get a lot of damage and a lot of payoff from the feint to compensate for switching targets. But there's a huge advantage to be gained in that this can really catch your opponent off guard, because if they see you switch a target and they were not anticipating it at all, that means they probably were too aggressive with their other ships and they might be in a really vulnerable position now. Now, this does also incur some pretty substantial risks. In order to feint in a convincing way, you have to get pretty close to the ship you're pretending to focus on. And by doing that, you might have to shoot at it, and they will likely shoot at you, and you're going to take some damage, which is okay if the feint pays off when you turn away. But if the feint doesn't pay off and they anticipate it, or their other ship doesn't get close enough for you to do damage, suddenly you've taken some damage, you've turned your ship away from your target, and you're not in a great position anymore.
Right. And then, of course, I mentioned this a bit earlier, but, you know, you are spreading out damage this way. You're changing targets halfway through. And, you know, sometimes dealing more damage spread out across multiple ships is worth it. Other times it isn't. And so you need to really understand when that's going to be valuable and when it's better to just commit to the target and keep chasing them.
Now, I do have a good example of this from actually back in first edition during a world championship. I ended up in round one of Swiss on a live stream, which is already pretty intimidating. But I was flying a classic Fenrau with two jump masters loaded out with ordnance versus a pretty competent opponent who was flying Whisper, Omega Leader, and a Lambda class shuttle. So this was not a great matchup for me already. And when the game began, it was apparent to me that I had to employ some sort of unique strategy, otherwise I just kind of lose out overall. So the way I started it was I made it look like I was focusing in on the Omega Leader to try and pull that off the board, which at the time was a ship notoriously hard to put damage on. We got into kind of the first engagement, a couple shots were traded, and it looked like I was going to focus in on the Omega Leader. Then in the following turn, I took the most aggressive, fastest maneuvers I could, and my opponent wasn't expecting that. So his maneuvers were all kind of based on me trying to continue to focus on Omega Leader. Instead, I got most of my ships past him. The Omega Leader didn't get to shoot, and I set all my fire onto the Lambda class shuttle, who took like a substantial amount of damage.
Right. And so when done well, this can really dramatically change the tempo of a game. And I think your example touched on this a bit. The other element of feinting is sometimes you're not pretending to focus on a ship. Sometimes, you know, you are really committed on them and want to chase them and finish them down, but you find yourself in a position where that's just not going to be advantageous. So, you know, the easiest way to pretend that you're committed to ship is to just be committed to it. But you need to identify, you know what, maybe it's not best for me to continue to chase, and maybe I can catch them off guard if I do switch targets here this turn.
And I think that's actually the beauty of feinting in that, you know, it looks like a conventional strategy right up to the turn where you switch all your ships. So your opponent might have a really hard time anticipating this just because you can abruptly switch targets on one turn without really having to telegraph what you're doing.
Right. And sometimes it's done for defensive reasons. Like, you know what? I know if my ships continue to commit on this target, it's obvious their other ships will be able to push a bunch of damage through on me, and I can't afford that. Sometimes it's for offensive reasons. I think this happens a lot when I'm playing against Rebel Han Solo builds, you know, where he's got that inertial dampener he can use every turn and or go fast and boost. You know, it's pretty difficult to continue to put firing arcs on that ship. You know, I can do it for a few turns, but usually I hit a point where I can't cover all of his options. Well, and then I look at, well, could I put reasonable pressure on the flanking ship? You know, what is Han's other wingman? Is he coming in trying to be aggressive? If so, I'm probably going to switch targets here.
And I think one of the big takeaways I hope our listeners take from this episode would be to, you know, see what's in common with all these strategies. These are by far not the limit of what different gambit strategies you could employ. These are some pretty common ones. But you'll notice a trend here across all of them of aggression. So oftentimes to pull off these pretty, you know, surprising and oftentimes really beneficial strategies, you're going to have to be a little bit more aggressive than you might like to be. And in X-Wing, aggression always incurs some amount of risk, whether you're employing a strategy or just trying to surprise your opponent. There's always going to be the chance that your strategy will fail, that you won't be able to pull off one of these gambits, that your opponent will take it. And the thing to keep in mind is, in order to practice these strategies, to figure out how your list can execute these strategies the best, that's going to involve losing some exchanges, that's going to involve losing some games before you can really figure out when are the right opportunities to take those risks for these big payoffs.
Right, and I hope that, you know, us identifying these in pretty common terms does help you to start to identify them on the table when you're playing. Recognizing, you know, hopefully during the planning phase is when you can recognize a gambit's about to happen, because that's usually when you can prepare to avoid it or set it up yourself. And, you know, and they don't always work, but through trying it, that's how you get a better gauge.
Like we said, this is not an exhaustive list, so if you guys can think of any other gambit strategies, let us know. You can tweet at us at Radio TCX Podcast or drop a comment on the Facebook post for this episode at facebook.com/Radio TCX. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/Radio TCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please go onto iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested in listening.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going onto patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
Again, folks, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.